Well, I'm pleased to welcome Andrew Ryan to Fremantle Shipping News. We're sitting in the sort of the backyard of Mojo's on a beautiful North Fremantle day, but welcome, Andrew.
It's such a pleasure to be here. How are we doing?
Let me ask you, there's at the moment a rising band competition going on. Where is it up to? What's happening with it?
We're up to Heat 8. Last night, a band called DIY Rain Clouds took out Heat 8. And from those heats, we then roll up to Semi 1 and 2, which are happening on Fridays as opposed to Wednesdays. Heats were all on Wednesdays. Semis are on Fridays. The grand final is then the third event on the horizon, which will be on a Saturday. So the first place getters of each heat make up what constitutes semi-final one and semi-final two, and then I select one act that didn't win for November 17, and then one act that didn't win from those heats for November 24, and they're the wild cards. And so first and second of those two semis will make up the four acts playing December 2.
Sounds more complicated than the World Cup football schedule.
They've been giving us a call about our procedures, but we're happy not talking to them.
Now you're one of the owners of Mojo's, but you're more involved in the music industry than that. Just tell our listeners the extent of your current involvement's interest. You're mixed up with Rosemount in booking, are you?
Yeah. Well, look, the best place to start is always the middle, and here we are right in the middle. Tonight at 8 p.m, Thursday, November 9, I think it is, I will be rehearsing with Michael Lake. Now, in 1987, me and Michael Lake were in primary school together. In 1992, we started a band. In 2001, he left that band. That band continued on and continues on to this day as a three-piece with the founding members, the bass player and drummer, Simon Struthers and Matt McGuire. But Michael Lake, who wrote songs on the first two albums for the band Adam Segalor, will be joining us tonight.
Well, and that's fantastic, because the three of you without him have actually made quite a name for yourself in that band.
Yeah, we've continued on the name that is Adam Segalor, and we're getting together tonight so that we can play RTRFM's 40th anniversary.
Yeah, well, and that's a great thing as well, and you've been mixed up with RTRFM over the years, haven't you?
Yeah. As young Adam Segaloras, we'd listen to RTRFM and find out all these bands that we wanted to sound like, basically. And so that was maybe 93 when I discovered RTRFM. And then around 98, 99, I called Mark Genge and I said, "I love what you do. Can I have a segment on your show?"
And I'd take your show over.
Yeah. I wanted a segment. And I was Andre Rion for the Guelup Chef from the Guelup Kitchens for 2 years. And then there was an on-air vibe, and they asked me to announce 10:30 one Wednesday morning, the Out to Lunch New Music Radio Show presenter didn't show up. So they were like, "Oh, he seems pretty confident."
That was the end of him.
And then I did it for 16 years. Every Wednesday.
Yeah, well, you know, another plug for RTR. They are fantastic, and what's happening with the 40-year anniversary should be really good. Now, what about your own background? You started to allude to it there with that early band and those guys. How did you get into this? Do you come from a musical family?
I don't come from a musical family, but my father's a music consumer. You know, he's got a beautiful brand new Marantz hi-fi system and beautiful record player, and he still buys new albums, and he's always bought new music, and he's more recently learned to play guitar. And that's kind of an influence that he and I have had on each other. So we really have a famous riffing relationship, me and my dad and my mother. They're still together. I need to make that clarification because I've referenced one of them, not the other.
A dutiful son.
A dutiful son, yes. So, no, I didn't have music in my background, but...
So where did it come from? How did it arise?
It was something I had to do. I I was attracted to it. I had every NXS album before the age of 10. I just thought music was it breathed. The kick drum is the heartbeat, and the melody is your breath. It helps you to live easy. I love it.
Now, did you ever imagine you'd be doing what you're doing right now in the music industry when you were first in that band with those four guys?
Certainly not. I'm certainly not a clairvoyant. I've learnt to set goals better these days, and I can imagine where I would like to be 5 years from now. But when I was younger, I thought maybe my band would take over the world, maybe, or maybe I would do PR for someone. But all of that started to change around early 2000s, 15 years ago from now. When I did a philosophy degree, photojournalism minor, anthropology minor, and then a friend of mine was just when I was about to complete the philosophy major, because there were these two intro units that were as menial as, I don't know, dried pigeon poo, and they were very irrelevant, and I couldn't find the energy to finish them, so I became more interested in assisting my friend who was having a hard time. He was booking the Hyde Park Hotel in about 2001, 2002, but he had a really hard time. He was going through some bankruptcies and this and that. He was going through some hard times. He then asked me to fill in for the Hyde Park Hotel coordinator role, and from then on, I was getting paid $50 a week by Paul Higgins in Athol Higgins' pub, who was fighting fit at the time, still playing the piano. I then built that role into a 7-night publicist event coordinator role, which is the basis of everything I do.
Now, you were described in something I was looking at as an impresario. Have you seen that?
No.
What do you think of being called an impresario? Would that fit the image?
I accept it on the grounds that I am willing to be charmed, regardless of whether you're actually getting at that.
Now, how long is it that you've been tied up with Mojos in the way you are?
Well, that model that I learnt from Paul Higgins and ended up getting paid a bit more per week, I then sold on to ALH, and I worked under Woolworths at Hyde Park Hotel with that model, with a local original music, live music model that made sense to Woolworths, of all people, which was proof to me that maybe there was something in my ability to do this stuff, because they're pretty commercial. But after about a year, it became too corporate. And at that time, a man named Panther, who is an absolute legend of this city, and I would love to hear a conversation you might have with him one day. For example, he was the front of house guy for Rose Tattoo in 1980. And he is my mentor. I love the man. He's my best friend. He invited me to buy into Mojos. And I said, I don't know. I've never done that before.
Well, that's a great friend.
Yeah. Because he could see what I was doing with the Heidi. He knew I had the energy. And so we did a trial run of shows. So I've been running a night called Going Solo for about 15 years. It started at the Hyde Park Hotel and now lives at the Moon. And Panther said, why don't you run Going Solo? So November or September 2006, we ran a few shows, and there was a brand new artist that was available to me to come over and tour, and he was going to play solo. My friend just started managing him. Aaron Cuthbert just started managing one lesser known, CW Stone King.
Oh, really?
And so we put CW in as part of my little trial, and of course it sold out, and it did a large bar. And they were like, you should really get involved. So I did the very foolish thing. I put money into a company that was very much in the red. And it had debts to everyone. And after about 2 years, 3 years, we got rid of all of those debts, and we've been sitting pretty ever since.
Well, well done. Now, what's it like to inherit something like Mojos, which has its own interesting entertainment history?
It's, how can I put it? If you can imagine a horse that could live forever, and therefore it had multiple owners, and then someone said, what a beautiful horse you had, you would say, I'm a temporary caretaker of that horse. I'm a fan of it as well. She isn't mine, you know? Mm. That is how I feel.
So you've got responsibilities to future generations here.
It's a beautiful, bigger than life venue. It's an amazing, it's a magical place, and it's not part of my ego or esteem to say that it's great because of this binding as hell perception I have, whereby I am a temporary caretaker of the place. I've got many more years on the lease. I intend to be here. I intend for my daughters to eventually play on the stage, etc., 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 under my own programming. But she is deep and old and long and has a patina in the air as music has travelled through her for so long before I was here.
Now, people who are interested in the Fremantle music scene in particular and know about Mojo's, have sense of some of the people who have played here, and we can mention some of those in a minute. But in the time that you've been here, whether it was as a fan or as a musician or now in your present capacity as an owner, have you seen a change in the audience? You must have been a development and reflection of the contemporary music at different times coming through the place. Or does it just feel like a continuum that just happened naturally?
Two answers, and they contradict. One is Mojo's has always been a countercultural site. When she was under that fella named John, who ran 237 Queen Victoria under the name the Stone Crow, it was certainly a site of counterculture, a place for subcultures to feel free together. And in that sense, I believe it was intergenerational from 18 to 80. Felt comfortable here, as far as I know. That is certainly the case now. So I think it's the same. But Fremantle itself has become more multidimensional in the last few years.
Sounds like a very polite word. What does that mean?
Well, the Fremantle sound was reggae and folk, you know, and maybe a bit of blues rock. But now all colours of the musical genre rainbow thrive in particularly at Mojo's. And we just finished programming the Fremantle Festival that had a vast range of artists played through that, and Fremantle opened their arms to all those types of music, and I feel we've done our bit with my programming to continue to open that door.
Now, is Fremantle programming, to use that expression, Fremantle reception of music, different from other places in Perth? For example, the Rosemount or in the eastern states? How do you compare and contrast?
There's something more welcoming about the Fremantle spirit. It is real. It is a tangible thing. There's something more. There's less judgment. You know.
Very interesting. Less judgment.
Yeah, there's less. I find in more commercial zones, and I don't feel that Fremantle is very. It doesn't. It's identifying feature, and if there were as a list of identifying features, at the top wouldn't be commerciality. You know, obviously there's going to be the infill and high density living, and the restaurants will do better, etc., etc. So there isn't, there's a lot of commercial people operating in this area. But part of Fremantle, I think, is more about a multicultural and multiplicit identities, and therefore, in such a forum, the self doesn't create the self by looking at others as much.
Sounds like we're back to your philosophy course.
Well, you go to a city like Sydney, everyone's like checking each other out, what kind of class they probably are, and constructing themselves through binary polemic sort of comparison, and it's all quite disgusting. I'm not really into Sydney, but anyway, whereas in the city it's a little bit like that. So that sort of.
Well, you mightn't be invited back after this.
I don't know. I'm challenging Sydney. I would like Sydney to say we're not like that.
But this is you saying Fremantle has this.
I think Perth City has a little bit of that sort of I am this, you are that commerciality, whereas Fremantle has less of that. There's still some of it.
So how does that or does it reflect in your programming here? Does it make you more open to a range of
absolutely. Well, I think that ultimately everyone wants to be comfortable wherever they are. So I think that this Fremantle sound this sense of freedom, this sense of you can do what you want as long as it's good, applies everywhere. So I've applied the Mojo-style programming, the Fremantle Zest programming, to Rosemount Hotel in North Perth, and it's worked. People want to feel in a place... They want to be in a place where everyone's welcome, whoever they are.
And can you describe that in more practical terms that make everyone
comfortable with that? Reggae music wasn't big in the city for a while. Now I just had a ska and British music festival at Rosemount Hotel, and it was absolutely monstrous. And that kind of thing didn't really happen. Like Kiwi reggae, sure, that toured through, and Fat Freddy's drop were always going to pull a crowd, no matter what.
People like you are obviously very important in helping to shape, if not dictate, musical trends. I mean, you sometimes, presumably, like an RTR-FM and other progressive stations, are wanting to challenge the audience. Would that be right?
You
forge new ways?
I think that's a symptom of the drive. The drive is more so an absolute joy derived from my own curiosity. So if I could promote and share anything and influence a subset of people that hadn't been influenced with this already, it would be to enhance curiosity.
So if you are curious and like the idea of something, love something,
you go on out and share it. You go out and find it. And
right.
My curiosity led to me wanting to run a band comp, and then all these amazing bands came out as this Mojo Rising. Woolly Mammoth, Carla Geneve, Spacey Jane, they're going to be huge next year, all of them, right?
Well, it's amazing. Let's just stay with that for a minute. People are, used to Triple J, Unearthed, and all of that sort of stuff, a national thing. So what have you done here? Where did it come from, and how are you seeing the future of this competition?
It's essential for me on a really pragmatic level. Like, I find out the new crop. They are the bands... The 46 bands that we put through the bang on are the bands that I'll be booking because I know about how awesome they are. And it was that... I'm not trying to pat myself on the back or anything, but, like, this is my stock and trade. I need to find out who's going to play and who's going to pull crowds and who's going to be awesome. But it is there... I do give credit to myself in the sense that it was my curiosity that led to listening to that. And I think that a lot of people out there that could benefit from enhancing their own curiosity and going out and going, well, maybe I'll check this out.
Now you can say, let's see what happens when we do this. Did you have a sense of what was out there? How did those rising bands find their way here? How did they put their name down?
Sure. I mean, I work with a massive number of people, okay? I coordinate the bookers just like I did with the Heidi, but there's like hundreds of people that build shows, because we run 362 shows a year, okay? 7 nights a week, not Good Friday, not Christmas, and I'm going to shut on New Year's Day.
No, it's just amazing, really.
Yeah. So I need a lot of people to help me. So they are all out in the community. They're all musos or young bookers or young managers or young agents or photographers or people with new labels or people with restaurants that are all under 20 that just want to... their friend, who they know is talented, to play a lineup. So there's a lot that comes in from...
You must hear this girl.
Andrew, I want this date. I've got this... There's a new side project from Mountain. It's amazing. We've got to get them. Absolutely. Then they play on a Tuesday and 100 payers. Like, wow. So there's that, right? I cannot ignore the cast of thousands that I'm entirely thankful and...
what makes a scene happen, isn't it? There's all those people making it happen.
Where Mojo's is in debt to those people. In terms of Mojo Rising specifically, they sent in their music link and their email and their phone number, and I, with a panel of people, listened to every single song of the 168 entrants.
So that was the auditioning process?
Yeah. And there were 46 bands that I just loved.
Now, when they have played the Heats, who's been on the selection panel? Who's picked the band of the night?
We have... I'm pleased with the integrity of our system. We have five different judges each night, and they've ranged from Kester Sappho, assistant to Phil Stevens, people from RTRFM, people from Wham, people from commercial event programming company Jump Climb, just people from...
So it has industry authenticity.
Industry peeps, and they then come down, and they're all blown away. It's like, Andrew, I'm going to come back next week. I'm like, you're not judging next week. Like, I'm coming back. Dixie Battersby, she was just... Do you know that Dixie Battersby, the publicist?
Yes.
She's... I love that woman. She's just so cool. She's unaffected. You know, she's got her own opinion, and that's what it is. She came down, she loved it. You know, she was like, that band's amazing. That band's amazing. So they all use the criteria that I developed. Can I share that?
If you'd like to.
I'd love to. So we realise that songwriting is pretty key. That's if they have an ability to write songs.
So they have to have original songs.
It's all original. So songwriting is one of the criteria that the five judges that rotate for each heat that we have never repeated, that's one of the criteria. Then there's level of innovation. So are they doing something different? Is the poetry of new form? Is the song form of unfamiliar format? Is the guitarist using an effect in such a way that perhaps hasn't been done before? Are they pushing it in innovation sense? Doesn't mean like unconventional instruments. It means unique approach. Can they play? Musicality is one. And the one I really enjoy is richness of influences, which is formerly known as the criteria originality. Richness of influences in the postmodern era is about, you know, we know that Kev Parker loved John Lennon, but we also know that he loved Dunyan, the guy that pretty much, like Kev Parker, writes all the parts and records it all, who, when Dunyan played at Rosemount Hotel, Kev took a photo of them playing December last year, and he wrote... And all of us pundits, us train spotters that know that Dunyan was a big influence on him, he wrote My Inspiration. And it was just like beautiful that he didn't shy away from that. He was like, I really love this band.
Didn't pretend that this just for me.
So the concept of level of richness of influence applies to arguably WA's biggest musical export, even. A rare combination of John Lennon and Dunyan, but very much his own art and heart and thing. So we have that criteria. And the final one is crowd response, because I need to get some I need to get some people in the bar.
Now, those five, weren't they, criterion, yes. are they communicated to the contestants so they know exactly what
absolutely.
They're up against?
I'm proud of it. We promote those that fact.
Now, that really, I'm interested, and this is really the next question I wanted to fire at you, which everyone tries to work out the answer to. Why is it that, let's just focus on Fremantle, this is Fremantle Shipping News, has this musical culture developed and been sustained here? Do you have a theory about this, sort of the meaning of life question?
Yeah, I've got a response. It's, for me, like, I can only go on nurture. I can't go on nature, okay? What about, I'm not going to metaphysicise about whatever. Nurture. Tell me one state that doesn't have pokies in Australia.
Wow, like that.
So we had to get some entertainment, because we didn't put these shit boxes to drain lonely people for rich idiots, you know?
Playing the same music that makes them feel good.
Well, I'm talking about pokies.
And pokies.
Yeah, playing the same music that makes them. I haven't got anything necessarily against cover music, because, West Australian Symphony Orchestra is a great example of a successful cover band. But
except let me tell you, Ross Edwards wrote some beautiful stuff that was original and they played. And you say that because I met him not long ago, a delightful fellow. But cover music, it's originality, though, that is what's at the root of this. People are thinking they're meeting those criteria that you described.
Absolutely, absolutely. And big respect to
to Wasso. We have to go out and we have to think, and apologies to Wasso. what's the other factors that make this all happen? Are there others, or is it just down to pokies?
I think pokies is like one of the... No pokies is a large influence. We can't... For me, I've thought about it for ages. So that, what are the physical differences? That's a big one. I think the next is... it's a pretty lovely place to live. Right, Perth is a beautiful home. The air is fresh, the water's clean.
Is this the Elizabeth South Australia theory? Is it that you put people into a fairly bland and in a sense, nothing happening place, and all of these rockers and musicians and the Jimmy Barneses of the world come out of it?
that's an inverse argument to my theory, I guess. I think that here is a beautiful place to be. and the sun is out all the time, and it's, you know, it's just a wonderful place. So I know that Kevin Parker does think of Perth as a you know, I'm making an example of him a second time because he's done very well.
The guy's great.
He's amazing, and his great example, which typifies this anomaly of talent on this western seaboard of this big country in the southern hemisphere. So I think it's the pub conditions, namely pokey, and thus then needing to find something for people to engage with, therefore bands being good here. I think we've got great schooling, like Whopper's quite an effective place.
Well, you must need that. You must have people who, on the nurture side, being encouraged to play instruments, to wherever they come from, they find their way.
Well, a lot of the musos through this band comp are Whopper players.
Oh, no, well, that's really interesting, isn't it?
Mm. So they're willing to, because they're actually willing to get out there as well with the put the band in the comp thing. That's a specific attitude.
Picasso could really draw, and then people of my parents' generation looked at what he did and said, "What's this? Any kid can do this." But this guy was just a talented artist who then progressed through things. So we're seeing musicians who are classically trained in all sorts of ways. They go to a Whopper.
Yeah.
But you're seeing them here in what sort of bands? What sort of music are you seeing coming through?
From a 7-piece electronic beat construction, femme dance music act such as Capano, across to Ween / Pink Floyd influenced pastoral psych rock in a band such as Say O Nam, to almost literary baritone, Serge Gainsbourg-esque music of Spencer Arbuckle, to the raw talent of Carl Geneve. Everyone's going to know her name. Don't worry about it.
I keep hearing it.
Yeah, she is like, yeah, she's something else. To Woolly Mammoth, who the guy's as comfortable as Paul Simon in his heyday singing, and he's like 19. So I don't know, there's all colours of the rainbow.
Well, everybody must feel in this environment that they, well, use the expression, they can come out and sing. They're going to be received well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also a competitive environment, you know. They want to sing well as well. Because the talent is high, the levels of talent are proliferated strong.
Mm. Now, over the last few years, and I've spoken to various people who know much more about this industry than I do, you know, there's been a worry that live venues have been disappearing, particularly in Fremantle. And is there, what's the state of play? Is there a concern? We need to remind people there aren't any pokies and they need to get out?
There's no concern in my understanding. If all the venues shut, I'd do much better.
That's the competitor, Andrew.
But moving on from the zero-sum perspective on volumes, it all comes down to individual stories, okay? The idea of trend has nothing to do with reality. The idea of trend is for those looking from a distance at a thing. If you're in the middle of a thing, you can see all sorts of second to second, minute to minute, hour to hour, day to day, week to week, year to year, decade to decade, influential factors that determine the outcome of any given music venue. Okay, so DeVille's Pad shut because Josh Collins is an artist of a venue proprietor, and he went to Melbourne, and no one else could continue that. Mark Pritchard then picked it up, and he's got gusto, and so that venue moved because of the actions of two individuals. Sewing Room is opened up recently because there is this perception that there is somewhat of a venue crisis, so that a lot of people thought that's the game to get in. So the Margaret River Chocolate Cat Factory owners got some money, got a nice bit of property on the main drag there near King Street, so they opened up a joint, and it's beautiful. Mark Neil is the booker there, and you know they're going to ride high in the middle of the city there. Bakery shut down, but that's because Marcus Canning had a deal with Western Power which only lasted 10 years, which is pretty good going, and you know, you don't get peppercorn rent venues for longer than 10 years, right? And so we could go on and on and on and on about all the variances that were caused by the actions of individuals, right? So there's no overall trend. There's just a want for music, and sometimes there's not enough rooms, and sometimes there's too many.
Whatever chaos theory means, and various people rely on it, and probably all mean different things, and probably I do too, but what you're describing would fit into my definition of chaos theory. You can't plan for making the music industry work and be successful. It's happening, it's competitive, it's nurture, whether or not there's some nature out there. Would you ever seek to set down guidelines? Would you ever seek to have it influenced by outside governmental regulation, control, spending of money, or is it an entirely private individual enterprise that's going to make it vibrant?
Two responses there. I'll try to keep it brief. I am a self-made operator. I haven't had any
impresario, I think is the expression.
I haven't sought any assistance whatsoever from anyone other than my family, who are very supportive. However, I've accounted for to a degree, and so we operate entirely independently, and I'm very proud of that. That said, with a little push, my daughter swings higher, for example. So the Labor government, before getting in, promised $3 million. I'm in talks with, along with other venue operators and other music industry types, are in talks with Mike Harris from the CEO of Wham, and he's looking to put together a structure to best use that very small amount of money for an industry that is in the billions what it produces across Australia, live music, billions of dollars. So $3 million, we're trying to all work out together what the best way we can use that money for.
What are the options? Are we able to talk about them?
Well, first of all, there's an idea that investment could be made into live music venues, and the conversation then behind the scenes, and I'll share it with you because it's, you know, this is a positive thing. There's no secret, really. Then there was the idea of distributing some money out to outlying venues, so it's not regional but deep suburban, because I think Perth's at the eight, is almost 5 years behind, about 5 years behind Melbourne, and Melbourne has those, that's pub that has that music for that suburb, that's that pub for that suburb, etc. And we don't really have that, but we're about to, because we're big enough. And also booze buses, you can't drive from from pub to pub. Although Uber's pretty handy. Moving on from that notion of potentially money going...
Decentralising venues.
Investing in decentralised venues on the basis that they have X percentage of original content, etc. Then there's also the idea of audience development. Now,
audience development?
Yes.
Oh, that sounds very Stalinistic.
So audience development for me, and with our independence, we exercise an actioning of what I call normalising live music for people under 18. So we program YMCA space called HQ, and have done for 2 years at a in-kind type operation, because quite a few of the bands that entered the band comp, we were programming when they were 16 through HQ.
Yes.
And this does us an infinite number of things. Okay, so let's look at how much money would AFL spend on Little League, right? A lot of money. West Australia has one U18 space dedicated to live original music, which is HQ, and we very proudly have been working on that for years. And what that does is normalise the very experimental experience of going out to listen to songs you've never heard before.
I take back the Stalinistic.
Hey, we're bordering on civic here. But what we really are proud of is that punters, because I'm not into free entry music venues. I am not. Anyone that says it's a good idea, they've never picked up. They wouldn't have bought an album in 10 years.
Well, someone has to pay for this.
Live music is worth money, right? And if you educate people to think that it's not, you are actively not valuing live music. Like, you are going out there, hitting the street, saying, don't value live music. So that's why I always have a door charge at our venues.
Now, I wanted to ask you earlier, you wonder where this is coming from, but when you said your father's got this fantastic Marantz system and so on, so is he into Spotify? Has he got Apple Music?
He's got all that stuff.
He's got all that. Oh, that's all right. I wondered, he might have been purer than that, but anyway.
He's a pure man, nevertheless.
All right.
But continuing on, if I may, so kids go out, they get familiar with paying door entry at HQ, attending the show. Some of them are taking photos. Some of them want to manage. Some of them want to. Some of them are doing sound. Some of them are artist liaison. And these are all like 16-year-olds in a safe space.
They're drinking lemonade.
Drinking lemonade, eating pies, you know that is how we. That is how I can look further ahead than 5 years.
It is interesting. I mean, I could develop a sort of a social discussion about just what the ramifications of that normalisation might be, but it's a natural way of adolescents discovering music and enjoying it. And
you can't make much money out of lemonade and pies, so WHAM ought to lobby for some money going into spaces such as that as audience development.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing the sort of things that might develop, because it's obviously a very important industry. Do you, when you put your impresario cap on and glasses with fuzzy sort of lenses and so on, what?
It's only after midnight that I do that.
Well, when you do that after midnight, how do you see the local music scene? We can probably see it as some sort of microcosm of the whole national scene. Being in 10 years' time, I've mentioned Spotify, I've mentioned all of these services that deliver music.
Well, maybe over a decade ago, there was that crest wind change, crest moment, high water mark, wind change moment, when Madonna, instead of being managed by a record label or whatever, was managed by a promoter. That's when everything changed, right? That's the sort of emblematic moment.
Right.
So what that meant is that live music, the experience of socialising together in front of your favourite artist while they're playing live, is the nuts and bolts. It's the bank, it's the pay dirt of the artist, for the most part, and that's never going to go away. There's never going to be AI robots that are pop stars that are as good as and as authentic and. You know, when we look up the rock star, he or this artist or the singer or whatever way you want to idolize the songwriter, their being human is why you like them. You know, you relate with that. You know, that's what it's all about, right? So I think that the artist will last forever. A lot of industries will drop out with AI, robotics, etc. But this one. There'll be, you know, maybe in 50 years there'll be a special brand new algorithm, AI written pop song performed by such and such a robot, but it'll be a bloody gimmick, you know, right? It's going to be an absolute gimmick. And I think the live scene will only grow.
Now, there's two live scenes, I mean, there's probably more than, but to paint them in their extremities, you've got the stadium performances, and then we've got venues like Mojo's, which, if everyone hasn't been here, you ought to get down quick. It's a small venue, but you've just won an award for that too, haven't you?
It's hilarious. My four-year-old daughter has a small gardening trail, and my father is a bit of a gardener, and he uses a big shovel, and somehow the little trail beat all the big shovels. You know, like, we're up against venues that were 2,000, 1,000, and we're 190, and we whipped them all.
Well, good on WHAM. And what do you think it is about this venue that brings the accolades, that wins the award, that makes people keep coming back?
I think it's a naturalness. It's that welcomingness of Fremantle. It's the history that we've touched on. This paterna of music constantly flowing through the air in this place, Mojo's. But it's also the fact that we all, you know, I buy new records. I have favourite artists. They change from day to day. And the bar manager is a songwriter.
He's yes.
Fantastic, Shane Corrie, songwriter and performer, fantastic performer, with Galloping Foxleys. Duncan.
Wonderful band. I was talking to Duncan earlier.
Duncan is a fantastic singer and bass player and guitarist.
He's in four bands.
Yeah. Everyone down here lives and breathes it. And so the artists feel comfortable, and therefore all the punters feel comfortable.
Now, let's just move a little bit imperceptibly, but I went to the stadium, and perhaps everyone wants to be Tame Impala in one form or another, but so many people are musicians. They see this as their lives. They love doing what they're doing. And for most of us, being in a live venue and feeling and hearing it is what it really is about. It's sure. just the authenticity of that. Is the phenomenon, which seems to be a phenomenon in the Perth Fremantle scene, if you meet a musician who's in a band, you'll discover he is in four bands. Mm. Is that unusual in Australia, or is it just the way it is for musicians?
It must be a small town thing, but I don't know why. I think everyone's got a bit each way, on one hand.
And they're often, as I would gather, just say, talking to Duncan, there's four different musical styles they'll be playing. And they'll be in a rock band, they'll be in a...
Yeah.
They'll be in a, whatever it is, a hip-hop jazz.
Well, I would bet, we reference Picasso, regardless of his grey or blue periods or whatever, he would have been coming up with cubism while he was doing realism, and he would have been coming up with those things, but it was all batched together for exhibitions, etc. Like, the analogy crosses over to album.
Well, it did take off, and he did get paid a lot of money for it.
Sorry?
It did take off, and he did get paid a lot of money for it.
He did well. But I would bet that he was conjuring and creating and manifesting different things, different visual forms, around similar times, but then put out batches of material. And similarly, I mean, you know, Duncan wants to play in his blues band, he wants to play in a country band, wants to play in a folk band, and everyone's got these multiple outlets that they need. I've got the analogy. If you really like to have a drink, then you probably don't drink the same drink all the time.
So this isn't a horse analogy.
We've moved on to booze. If you really like to have a drink, you probably have a favourite Chardonnay, you probably got a favourite Pinot Gris, you probably got a favourite Riesling, you probably got, you know, port.
Spot on so far.
Favorite port, you got a Shiraz, you got out of Barossa, of course. Pinot Noir, I'm from Denmark. And then you move over to the whiskies, and you know, there's a whole world out there, right? If you really like to have a drink, you don't want to drink the same thing all the time. Similar for a muso, right? He loves music, and then, or she wants to try their hand at having fun with all of them.
Now, you've just reminded me of something else I did want to ask you as an external viewer of all of this, an active participant and as a musician. It's often said there aren't that many women in the music industry. Is that right? Is that a correct perception? What do you think?
We are, as a Western culture, still a toddler when it comes to gender. This whole idea of the... should we not let same-sex couples marry? That's just a toddler perspective on gender, okay? It's a not-out-of-the-swamp-yet perspective on gender. If you realise people are people, then they can love each other and they can get married. Similarly, there has been great empowerment to men in music up until now, but very recently it's all changed. Okay, it is all changed. This was the year of change, and next year will be the year of consolidating gender balance within arts, because you can't get away with it anymore.
So where's it come from? How's it being represented?
It's come from individuals again. Evelyn Morris, artist named Pikelet, started an entity which is called Listen from Melbourne, and it's all about engaging with critical perspectives that are practical from a feminist worldview. Xanthia O'Connor, one of the staff of Cool Perth Nights, is very outspoken. She actually has ratios and percentages of the number of men and women that play at all of Cool Perth Nights venues. Yes. And I've got a percentage of an understanding from week to week of how many women and men are on our stages. Mojo's is sitting around 37, probably between 37 and 42% female, and it's much higher than our other rooms, which we're working on. So it needs to be actively addressed, and similarly in corporate society and culture, there needs to be quotas to balance things out. The quota system is right, and the reason for that is, let me put it like this, if you had cancer, right, would you go and see a doctor to fix the problem or not?
Right? Well, some people who won't.
Most would, right? And that's because there's an error in the cells, which wasn't your fault, that you have to fix with exterior influence, Okay, so quotas are right. If you support people trying to be healthy when they're sick, then you support quotas. Okay, so we are addressing that with balance in our lineups, and we're dead set serious about it. I've got predominantly female staff, not because of this quota thing, but because they're better workers. And I must and I want to. And am driven by my team to address this, and that's why people are being outspoken. Stella Donnelly, for example. Phil Stevens has just started managing his latest star, and she is...
she swept it all the other night, didn't she?
Yeah, she's won a million awards. She's gonna tell the world. Got a bunch of shows coming up at Mojo's. We're very pleased about that, every Wednesday in December. And she's very outspoken, and a key song is Boys Will Be Boys, which talks about... deconstructing that idolised, romanticised presumption that men are always right.
And fathers in music have daughters in music.
That's right. Yeah, my partner is Pussy Groom, and she's an incredible, mystifying melodician. And so, yeah, look, there are an equal number of women and men out there, but the view has been to prioritise or presume that rock star means man. Up until very recently, but all that's changed.
Well, that's probably a nice note for us to draw all of this together. Andrew, it's been wonderful talking to you. With your five-year plan, your five-year impresario plan, where would you be in 5 years, do you think? Can you share anything with us?
Mojo's will be sitting pretty. My daughter... Ivy will be 9 years old. My daughter, Athlee, will be 6 3/4. My partner, Felicity, will hopefully still love me. I intend to continue working with Adrian Finney and his group FJM via their venue Rosemount. We'll see how we go. I hope that I'm still programming the Fremantle Festival. We'll see how we go. But in terms of myself, I have various plans, and if I told you, I'd have to kill you.
Well, on that note, wishing to last just a little longer, let me say thanks very much for speaking to me, and good luck with everything here at Mojo's and also in your wider world.
Fantastic to meet you.
You too. Thanks.
That was fun. Thank you so much.